About Patikiputta, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying in the land of the Malas, near the Malian town named Anupiya. Then the Buddha robed up in the morning and, taking his bowl and robe, entered Anupiya for alms. Then it occurred to him, it's too early to wander for alms in Anupiya. Why don't I go to the wanderer Bhagavagota's monastery to visit him? So that's what he did. Then the wanderer Bhagavagota said to the Buddha, come, blessed one. Welcome, blessed one. It's been a long time since you took the opportunity to come here. Please, sir, sit down. This seat is ready. The Buddha sat on the seat spread out, while Bhagavagota took a low seat, sat to one side, and said to the Buddha, sir, a few days ago Sunakata the Lichavi came to me and said, now, Bhagava, I have rejected the Buddha. Now I no longer live dedicated to him. Sir, is what Sunakata said true? Indeed it is, Bhagava. A few days ago, Sunakata the Lichavi came to me, bowed, sat down to one side and said, now I reject the Buddha. Now I shall no longer live dedicated to you. When Sunakata said this, I said to him, but Sunakata, did I ever say to you, come, live dedicated to me? No, sir. Or did you ever say to me, sir, I shall live dedicated to the Buddha? No, sir. So it seems to me that I did not ask you to live dedicated to me, nor did you say you would live dedicated to me. In that case, you foolish man, are you really in a position to be rejecting anything? See how far you have strayed. But, sir, the Buddha never performs any superhuman demonstrations of psychic power for me. But, Sunakata, did I ever say to you, come, live dedicated to me, and I will perform a superhuman demonstration of psychic power for you? No, sir. Or did you ever say to me, sir, I shall live dedicated to the Buddha, and the Buddha will perform a superhuman demonstration of psychic power for me? No, sir. Or did you ever say to me, sir, I shall live dedicated to the Buddha, and the Buddha will perform a superhuman demonstration of psychic power for me? No, sir. So it seems that I did not ask this of you, and you did not require it of me. In that case, you foolish man, are you really in a position to be rejecting anything? What do you think, Sunakata? Whether or not there is a demonstration of psychic power, does my teaching lead someone who practices it to the goal of the complete ending of suffering? It does, sir. So it seems that whether or not there is a demonstration of psychic power, my teaching leads someone who practices it to the goal of the complete ending of suffering. In that case, what is the point of superhuman demonstrations of psychic power? See how far you have strayed, you foolish man. But, sir, the Buddha never describes the origin of the world to me. But, Sunakata, did I ever say to you, come, live dedicated to me, and I will describe the origin of the world to you? No, sir. Or did you ever say to me, sir, I shall live dedicated to the Buddha, and the Buddha will describe the origin of the world to me? No, sir. So it seems that I did not ask this of you, and you did not require it of me. In that case, you foolish man, are you really in a position to be rejecting anything? What do you think, Sunakata? Whether or not the origin of the world is described, does my teaching lead someone who practices it to the goal of the complete ending of suffering? It does, sir. So it seems that whether or not the origin of the world is described, my teaching leads someone who practices it to the goal of the complete ending of suffering. In that case, what is the point of describing the origin of the world? See how far you have strayed, you foolish man. In many ways, Sunakata, you have praised me like this in the Vajjayan capital. That blessed one is perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. In many ways you have praised the teaching like this in the Vajrayana capital. The teaching is well explained by the Buddha, realizable in this very life, immediately effective, inviting inspection, relevant, so that sensible people can know it for themselves. In many ways you have praised the Sangha like this in the Vajrayana capital. The Sangha of the Buddha's disciples is practicing the way that's good, straightforward, methodical and proper. It consists of the four pairs, the eight individuals. This is the Sangha of the Buddha's disciples that is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a teacher's offering, worthy of greeting with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world. I declare this to you, Sunakata. I announce this to you. There will be those who say that Sunakata was unable to lead the spiritual life under the ascetic Gotama. That's why he rejected the training and returned to a lesser life. That's what they'll say. Though I spoke to Sunakata like this, he still left this teaching and training, like someone on the highway to hell. Bhagava, this one time I was staying in the land of the Tulus, where they have a town named Uttarakhar. Then I robed up in the morning and, taking my bowl and robe, entered Uttarakhar for alms with Sunakata the Lichavi as my second monk. Now at that time the naked ascetic Korakhatiya had taken a vow to behave like a dog. When food is tossed on the ground, he gets down on all fours, eating and devouring it just with his mouth. Sunakata saw him doing this and thought, that ascetic is a true holy man. Then, knowing what Sunakata was thinking, I said to him, don't you claim to be an ascetic, a follower of the Sakyan, you foolish man? But why does the Buddha say this to me? When you saw that naked ascetic, Korakhatiya, didn't you think, that ascetic is a true holy man? Yes, sir. But, sir, are you jealous of the perfected ones? I'm not jealous of the perfected ones, you foolish man. Rather, you should give up this harmful misconception that has arisen in you. Don't create lasting harm and suffering for yourself. That naked ascetic Korakhatiya, who you imagine to be a true holy man, will die of flatulence in 7 days. And when he dies, he'll be reborn in the very lowest class of demons named the Kalakanyas. And when he dies, they'll throw him in the charnel ground on a clump of vetiver. If you wish, Sunakata, go to Korakhatiya and ask him whether he knows his own destiny. It's possible that he will answer, Reverend Sunakata, I know my own destiny. I'll be reborn in the very lowest class of demons named the Kalakanyas. So, Bhagava, Sunakata went to see Korakhatiya and said to him, Reverend Korakhatiya, the ascetic Gotama has declared that you will die of flatulence in 7 days. And when you die, you'll be reborn in the very lowest class of demons named the Kalakanyas. And when you die, they'll throw you in the charnel ground on a clump of vetiver. But by eating just a little food and drinking just a little water, you'll prove what the ascetic Gotama says to be false. Then Sunakata counted up the days until the 7th day, as happens when you have no faith in the realized one. But on the 7th day, the naked ascetic Korakhatiya died of flatulence. And when he passed away, he was reborn in the very lowest class of demons, named the Kalakanyas. And when he passed away, they threw him in the charnel ground on a clump of vetiver. Sunakata, the Lichavi, heard about this. So he went to see Korakhatiya in the charnel ground on the clump of vetiver. There he struck Korakhatiya with his fist 3 times. Reverend Korakhatiya, do you know your destiny? Then Korakhatiya got up, rubbing his back with his hands, and said, Reverend Sunakata, I know my own destiny. I've been reborn in the very lowest class of demons named the Kalakanyas. After speaking, he fell flat right there. Then Sunakata came to me, bowed, and sat down to one side. I said to him, What do you think, Sunakata? Did the declaration I made about Korakatiya turn out to be correct or not? It turned out to be correct. What do you think, Sunakata? If that is so, has a superhuman demonstration of psychic power been performed or not? Clearly, sir, a superhuman demonstration of psychic power has been performed. Though I performed such a superhuman demonstration of psychic power, you say this. But, sir, the Buddha never performs any superhuman demonstrations of psychic power for me. See how far you have strayed. Though I spoke to Sunakata like this, he still left this teaching and training, like someone on the highway to hell. This one time, Bhagava, I was staying near Vesali at the great wood, in the hall with the peaked roof. Now at that time the naked ascetic Kalara Mataka was residing in Vesali, and in the Vajjian capital he had reached the peak of material possessions and fame. He had undertaken these seven vows. As long as I live, I will be a naked ascetic, not wearing clothes. As long as I live, I will be celibate, not having sex. As long as I live, I will consume only meat and alcohol, not eating rice and porridge. And I will not go past the following tree shrines near Vesali: the Udana shrine to the east, the Gotamaka to the south, the Satamba to the west, and the Bahuputta to the north. And it was due to undertaking these seven vows that he had reached the peak of material possessions and fame. So, Bhagava, Sunakata went to see Kalara Mataka and asked him a question. But when he couldn't answer it, he displayed irritation, hate, and bitterness. So Sunakata thought, I've offended the holy man, the perfected one, the ascetic. I mustn't create lasting harm and suffering for myself. Then Sunakata came to me, bowed, and sat down to one side. I said to him, don't you claim to be an ascetic, a follower of the Sakyan, you foolish man? But why does the Buddha say this to me? Didn't you go to see the naked ascetic, Kalara Mataka, and ask him a question? But when he couldn't answer it, he displayed irritation, hate, and bitterness. Then you thought, I've offended the holy man, the perfected one, the ascetic. I mustn't create lasting harm and suffering for myself. Yes, sir. But, sir, are you jealous of perfected ones? I'm not jealous of the perfected ones, you foolish man. Rather, you should give up this harmful misconception that has arisen in you. Don't create lasting harm and suffering for yourself. That naked ascetic, Kalara Mataka, who you imagined to be a true holy man, will shortly be clothed, living with a partner, eating rice and porridge, having gone past all the tree shrines near Vesali, and he will die after losing all his fame. And that's exactly what happened. Sunakata heard about this. He came to me, bowed, and sat down to one side. I said to him, what do you think, Sunakata? Did the declaration I made about Kalara Mataka turn out to be correct or not? It turned out to be correct. What do you think, Sunakata? If that is so, has a superhuman demonstration of psychic power been performed or not? Clearly, sir, a superhuman demonstration of psychic power has been performed. Though I perform such a superhuman demonstration of psychic power, you say this. But, sir, the Buddha never performs any superhuman demonstrations of psychic power for me. See how far you have strayed? Though I spoke to Sunakata like this, he still left this teaching and training, like someone on the highway to hell. This one time, Bhagava, I was staying right there near Vesali at the great wood, in the hall with the peaked roof. Now at that time the naked ascetic Pataputta was residing in Vesali, and in the Vajjian capital he had reached the peak of material possessions and fame. He was telling a crowd in Vesali, both the ascetic Gotama and I speak from knowledge. One who speaks from knowledge ought to display a superhuman demonstration of psychic power to another who speaks from knowledge. If the ascetic Gotama meets me halfway, there we should both perform a superhuman demonstration of psychic power. If he performs one demonstration of psychic power, I'll perform two. If he performs two, I'll perform four. If he performs four, I'll perform eight. However many demonstrations of psychic power the ascetic Gotama performs, I'll perform double. Then Sunakata came to me, bowed, sat down to one side and told me all of this. I said to him, Sunakata, the naked ascetic Patikiputta is not capable of coming into my presence unless he gives up that statement and that intention and lets go of that view. If he thinks he can come into my presence without giving up those things, his head may explode. Careful what you say, Blessed One. Careful what you say, Holy One. But why do you say this to me, Sunakata? Sir, the Buddha has definitively asserted that Patikaputta is not capable of coming into the Buddha's presence, otherwise his head may explode. But Patikaputta might come into the Buddha's presence in disguise, proving the Buddha wrong. Sunakata, would the realized one make an ambiguous statement? But sir, did you make that statement after comprehending Patikaputta's mind with your mind, or did the deities tell you about it? Both, Sunakata. For Ajita, the Lichavi general, has recently passed away and been reborn in the host of the 33. He came and told me this. The naked ascetic Patikaputta is shameless, sir. He is a liar. For he has declared of me in the Vajjayan capital, Ajita the Lichavi general has been reborn in the great hell. But that is not true. I have been reborn in the host of the 33. The naked ascetic Patikaputta is shameless, sir. He is a liar. Patikaputta is not capable of coming into the Buddha's presence, otherwise his head may explode. Thus I both made that statement after comprehending Patikaputta's mind with my mind, and deities told me about it. So, Sunakata, I'll wander for alms in Vasali. After the meal, on my return from alms round, I'll go to Patikaputta's monastery for the day's meditation. Now you may tell him, if you so wish. Then, Bhagava, I robed up in the morning and, taking my bowl and robe, entered Vasali for alms. After the meal, on my return from alms round, I went to Patikaputta's monastery for the day's meditation. Then Sunakata rushed into Vasali to see the very well-known Lichavis and said to them, Sirs, after his alms round, the Buddha has gone to Patikaputta's monastery for the day's meditation. Come forth, sirs, come forth. There will be a superhuman demonstration of psychic power by the holy ascetics. So the very well-known Lichavis thought, It seems there will be a superhuman demonstration of psychic power by the holy ascetics. Let's go. Then he went to see the very well-known, well-to-do Brahmins, rich householders and ascetics and Brahmins who follow various other paths, and said the same thing. They all said, It seems there will be a superhuman demonstration of psychic power by the holy ascetics. Let's go. Then all those very well-known people went to Patikaputta's monastery. That assembly was large, Bhagava. There were many hundreds, many thousands of them. Patikaputta heard, It seems that very well-known Lichavis, well-to-do Brahmins, rich householders and ascetics and Brahmins who follow various other paths have come forth. And the ascetic Gotama is sitting in my monastery for the day's meditation. When he heard that, he became frightened, scared, his hair standing on end. In fear, he went to the pale moon ebony trunk monastery of the wanderers. The assembly heard of this and instructed a man, Come, my man, go to see Patikaputta at the pale moon ebony trunk monastery and say to him, Come forth, reverent Patikaputta. All these very well-known people have come forth, and the ascetic Gotama is sitting in your monastery for the day's meditation. For you stated this in the assembly at Vasali. Both the ascetic Gotama and I speak from knowledge. One who speaks from knowledge ought to display a superhuman demonstration of psychic power to another who speaks from knowledge. If the ascetic Gotama meets me halfway, there we should both perform a superhuman demonstration of psychic power. If he performs one demonstration of psychic power, I'll perform two. If he performs two, I'll perform four. If he performs four, I'll perform eight. However many demonstrations of psychic power the ascetic Gotama performs, I'll perform double. Come forth, reverent Pataliputta, halfway. The ascetic Gotama has come the first half and is sitting in your monastery. Yes, sir, replied that man, and delivered the message. When he had spoken, Partika said, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming. But wriggle as he might, he couldn't get up from his seat. Then that man said to Pataliputta, What's up, reverent Pataliputta? Is your bottom stuck to the bench, or is the bench stuck to your bottom? You say, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming, but wriggle as you might, you can't get up from your seat. And as he was speaking, Partika said, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming, but wriggle as he might, he couldn't get up from his seat. When that man knew that Pataliputta had lost, he returned to the assembly and said, Pataliputta has lost, sirs. He says, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming, but wriggle as he might, he can't get up from his seat. When he said this, I said to the assembly, The naked ascetic, Pataliputta, is not capable of coming into my presence unless he gives up that statement and that intention and lets go of that view. If he thinks he can come into my presence without giving up those things, his head may explode. Then Bhagava, a certain Lichavi minister, stood up and said to the assembly, Well then, sirs, wait a moment, I'll go. Hopefully I'll be able to lead Pataliputta back to the assembly. So that minister went to see Pataliputta and said, Come forth, reverend Pataliputta. It's best for you to come forth. All these very well-known people have come forth, and the ascetic Gotama is sitting in your monastery for the day's meditation. You said you'd meet the ascetic Gotama halfway. The ascetic Gotama has come the first half and is sitting in your monastery. The ascetic Gotama has told the assembly that you're not capable of coming into his presence. Come forth, Pataliputta. When you come forth, we'll make you win and the ascetic Gotama lose. When he had spoken, Pataliputta said, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming. But wriggle as he might, he couldn't get up from his seat. Then the minister said to Pataliputta, What's up, reverend Pataliputta? Is your bottom stuck to the bench, or is the bench stuck to your bottom? You say, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming, but wriggle as you might, you can't get up from your seat. And as he was speaking, Pataliputta said, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming, but wriggle as he might, he couldn't get up from his seat. When the Lichavi minister knew that Pataliputta had lost, he returned to the assembly and said, Pataliputta has lost, sirs. When he said this, I said to the assembly, Pataliputta is not capable of coming into my presence, otherwise his head may explode. The good Lichavis might think, Let's bind Pataliputta with straps and drag him with a pair of oxen. But either the straps will break or Pataliputta will. Then Bhagava, Jalia, the pupil of the wood bowl ascetic, stood up and said to the assembly, Well then, sirs, wait a moment. I'll go. Hopefully I'll be able to lead Pataliputta back to the assembly. So Jalia went to see Pataliputta and said, Come forth, reverend Pataliputta. It's best for you to come forth. All these very well-known people have come forth, and the ascetic Gotama is sitting in your monastery for the day's meditation. You said you'd meet the ascetic Gotama halfway. The ascetic Gotama has come the first half and is sitting in your monastery. The ascetic Gotama has told the assembly that you're not capable of coming into his presence. And he said that even if the Lichavis try to bind you with straps and drag you with a pair of oxen, Either the straps will break or you will. Come forth, Pataka-putta. When you come forth, we'll make you win and the ascetic Gotama lose. When he had spoken, Pataka-putta said, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming. But wriggle as he might, he couldn't get up from his seat. Then Jalia said to Pataka-putta, What's up, Reverend Pataka-putta? Is your bottom stuck to the bench, or is the bench stuck to your bottom? You say, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming, but wriggle as you might, you can't get up from your seat. And as he was speaking, Pataka-putta said, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming. But wriggle as he might, he couldn't get up from his seat. When Jalia knew that Pataka-putta had lost, he said to him, Once upon a time, Reverend Pataka-putta, it occurred to a lion, king of beasts, Why don't I make my lair near a certain forest? Towards evening I can emerge from my den, yawn, look all around the four directions, roar my lion's roar three times, and set out on the hunt. Having slain the very best of the deer herd and eaten the most tender flesh, I could return to my den. And so that's what he did. Now there was an old jackal who had grown fat on the lion's leavings, becoming arrogant and strong. He thought, What does the lion, king of beasts, have that I don't? Why don't I make my lair near a certain forest? Towards evening I can emerge from my den, yawn, look all around the four directions, roar my lion's roar three times, and set out on the hunt. Having slain the very best of the deer herd and eaten the most tender flesh, I could return to my den. And so that's what he did. But when he tried to roar a lion's roar, he only managed to squeal and yelp like a jackal. And what is a pathetic jackal's squeal next to the roar of a lion? In the same way, Reverend, while living on the harvest of the Holy One, enjoying the leftovers of the Holy One, you presume to attack the Realized One, the Perfected One, the Fully Awakened Buddha. Who are the pathetic Pataka-puttas to attack the Realized Ones, the Perfected Ones, the Fully Awakened Buddhas? When Jalia couldn't get Pataka-putta to shift from his seat even with this simile, he said to him, Seeing himself as equal to the lion, the jackal presumed, I'm the king of the beasts. But in reality he only managed to yelp. And what's a sad jackal's squeal to the roar of a lion? In the same way, Reverend, while living on the harvest of the Holy One, you presume to attack him. When Jalia couldn't get Pataka-putta to shift from his seat even with this simile, he said to him, Following in the steps of another, seeing himself grown fat on scraps, until he doesn't even see himself, the jackal presumes he's a tiger, but in reality he's only managed to yelp. And what's a sad jackal's squeal to the roar of a lion? In the same way, Reverend, while living on the harvest of the Holy One, you presume to attack him. When Jalia couldn't get Pataka-putta to shift from his seat even with this simile, he said to him, Gorged on frogs and mice from the barn, and carcasses tossed in the cemetery, thriving in the great empty wood, the jackal presumed, I'm the king of the beasts, but in reality he only managed to yelp. And what's a sad jackal's squeal to the roar of a lion? In the same way, Reverend, while living on the harvest of the Holy One, enjoying the leftovers of the Holy One, you presume to attack the Realized One, the Perfected One, the Fully Awakened Buddha. Who are the pathetic Pataka-puttas to attack the Realized Ones, the Perfected Ones, the Fully Awakened Buddhas? When Jalia couldn't get Pataka-putta to shift from his seat even with this simile, he returned to the assembly and said, Pataka-putta has lost, sirs. He says, I'm coming, sir, I'm coming. But wriggle as he might, he can't get up from his seat. When he said this, I said to the assembly, The naked ascetic Pataka-putta is not capable of coming into my presence unless he gives up that statement and that intention and lets go of that view. If he thinks he can come into my presence without giving up those things, his head may explode. The good Lichavese might think, let's bind Partakaputta with straps and drag him with a pair of oxen. But either the straps will break or Partakaputta will. Partakaputta is not capable of coming into my presence, otherwise his head may explode. Then, Bhagava, I educated, encouraged, fired up and inspired that assembly with a Dhamma talk. I released that assembly from the great bondage and lifted 84,000 beings from the great swamp. Next, I entered upon the fire element, rose into the sky to the height of 7 palm trees, and created a flame another 7 palm trees high, blazing and smoking. Finally, I landed at the great wood in the hall with the peaked roof. Then Sunakata came to me, bowed, and sat down to one side. I said to him, what do you think, Sunakata? Did the declaration I made about Partakaputta turn out to be correct or not? It turned out to be correct. What do you think, Sunakata? If that is so, has a superhuman demonstration of psychic power been performed or not? Clearly, sir, a superhuman demonstration of psychic power has been performed. Though I perform such a superhuman demonstration of psychic power, you say this. But, sir, the Buddha never performs any superhuman demonstrations of psychic power for me. See how far you have strayed. Though I spoke to Sunakata like this, he still left this teaching and training like someone on the highway to hell. Bhagava, I understand the origin of the world. I understand this and what goes beyond it. Yet since I do not misapprehend that understanding, I have realized extinguishment within myself. Directly knowing this, the realized one does not come to ruin. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who describe the origin of the world in their tradition as created by the Lord God, by Brahma. I go up to them and say, is it really true that this is the Venerable's view? And they answer, yes. I say to them, but how do you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about as created by the Lord God, by Brahma? But they cannot answer, and they even question me in return, so I answer them. There comes a time when, reverends, after a very long period has passed, this cosmos contracts. As the cosmos contracts, sentient beings are mostly headed for the realm of streaming radiance. There they are mind-made, feeding on rapture, self-luminous, moving through the sky, steadily glorious, and they remain like that for a very long time. There comes a time when, after a very long period has passed, this cosmos expands. As it expands, an empty mansion of Brahma appears. Then a certain sentient being, due to the running out of their lifespan or merit, passes away from that group of radiant deities and is reborn in that empty mansion of Brahma. There they are mind-made, feeding on rapture, self-luminous, moving through the sky, steadily glorious, and they remain like that for a very long time. But after staying there all alone for a long time, they become dissatisfied and anxious. Oh, if only another being would come to this state of existence. Then other sentient beings, due to the running out of their lifespan or merit, pass away from that group of radiant deities and are reborn in that empty mansion of Brahma, in company with that being. There they too are mind-made, feeding on rapture, self-luminous, moving through the sky, steadily glorious, and they remain like that for a very long time. Now the being who is reborn there first thinks, I am Brahma, the great Brahma, the undefeated, the champion, the universal seer, the wielder of power, the Lord God, the maker, the author, the best, the begetter, the controller, the father of those who have been born and those yet to be born. Why is that? Because first I thought, oh, if only another being would come to this state of existence. Such was my heart's wish, and then these creatures came to this state of existence. And the beings who were reborn there later also think, this must be Brahma, the great Brahma, the undefeated, the champion, the universal seer, the wielder of power, the Lord God, the maker, the author, the best, the begetter, the controller, the father of those who have been born and those yet to be born. And we have been created by him. Why is that? Because we see that he was reborn here first and we arrived later. And the being who is reborn first is more long-lived, beautiful, and illustrious than those who arrived later. It's possible that one of those beings passes away from that group and is reborn in this state of existence. Having done so, they go forth from the lay life to homelessness. By dint of keen, resolute, committed, and diligent effort, and right focus, they experience an immersion of the heart of such a kind that they recollect that past life, but no further. They say, "He who is Brahma, the great Brahma, the undefeated, the champion, the universal seer, the wielder of power, the Lord God, the maker, the author, the best, the begetter, the controller, the father of those who have been born and those yet to be born, is permanent, everlasting, eternal, imperishable, remaining the same for all eternity. We who were created by that Brahma are impermanent, not lasting, short-lived, perishable, and have come to this state of existence. This is how you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about as created by the Lord God, by Brahma." They say, "That is what we have heard, Reverend Gotama, just as you say." Bhagava, "I understand the origin of the world. I understand this and what goes beyond it. Yet since I do not misapprehend that understanding, I have realized extinguishment within myself. Directly knowing this, the realized one does not come to ruin." There are some ascetics and Brahmins who describe the origin of the world in their tradition as due to those depraved by play. I go up to them and say, "Is it really true that this is the Venerable's view?" And they answer, "Yes." I say to them, "But how do you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about due to those depraved by play?" But they cannot answer. And they even question me in return. So I answer them, "Reverends, there are gods named depraved by play. They spend too much time laughing, playing, and making merry, and in doing so, they lose their mindfulness and they pass away from that group of gods. It's possible that one of those beings passes away from that group and is reborn in this state of existence. Having done so, they go forth from the lay life to homelessness. By dint of keen, resolute, committed, and diligent effort and right focus, they experience an immersion of the heart of such a kind that they recollect that past life, but no further. They say, "The gods not depraved by play don't spend too much time laughing, playing, and making merry. So they don't lose their mindfulness and don't pass away from that group of gods. They are permanent, everlasting, eternal, imperishable, remaining the same for all eternity. But we who were depraved by play spent too much time laughing, playing, and making merry. In doing so, we lost our mindfulness and passed away from that group of gods. We are impermanent, not lasting, short-lived, perishable, and have come to this state of existence." This is how you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about due to those depraved by play. They say, "That is what we have heard, Reverend Gotama, just as you say." Bhagava, "I understand the origin of the world. Directly knowing this, the realized one does not come to ruin." There are some ascetics and Brahmins who describe the origin of the world in their tradition as due to those who are malevolent. I go up to them and say, "Is it really true that this is the Venerable's view?" And they answer, "Yes." I say to them, "But how do you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about due to those who are malevolent?" But they cannot answer. And they even question me in return. So I answer them. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who describe the origin of the world in their tradition as having arisen by chance. I go up to them and say, "Is it really true that this is the Venerable's view?" And they answer, "Yes." I say to them, "But how do you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about by chance?" But they cannot answer, and they even question me in return. So I answer them, "Reverends, there are gods named non-percipient beings. When perception arises, they pass away from that group of gods. It's possible that one of those beings passes away from that group and is reborn in this state of existence. Having done so, they go forth from the lay life to homelessness. By dint of keen, resolute, committed and diligent effort and right focus, they experience an immersion of the heart of such a kind that they recollect the arising of perception, but no further. They say, 'The self and the cosmos arose by chance.' Why is that? Because formerly I didn't exist. Now from not being, I've changed into being. This is how you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about by chance." They say, "That is what we have heard, Reverend Gotama, just as you say. I understand this and what goes beyond it. Yet since I do not misapprehend that understanding, I have realized extinguishment within myself. Directly knowing this, the realized one does not come to ruin. Though I speak and explain like this, certain ascetics and Brahmins misrepresent me with a false, baseless, lying, untruthful claim. The ascetic Gotama has a distorted perspective, and so have his monks. He says, 'When one enters and remains in the liberation of the beautiful, at that time one only perceives what is ugly.' But I don't say that, I say this. When one enters and remains in the liberation of the beautiful, at that time one only perceives what is beautiful." They are the ones with a distorted perspective, sir, who regard the Buddha and the mendicants in this way. Sir, I am quite confident that the Buddha is capable of teaching me so that I can enter and remain in the liberation on the beautiful. It's hard for you to enter and remain in the liberation on the beautiful, since you have a different view, creed, belief, practice, and tradition. Come now, Bhagava, carefully nurture the confidence that you have in me. If it's hard for me to enter and remain in the liberation on the beautiful, since I have a different view, creed, belief, practice, and tradition, I shall carefully nurture the confidence that I have in the Buddha." This is what the Buddha said. Satisfied, the wanderer Bhagava Gotama was happy with what the Buddha said. "Reverends, there are gods named malevolent. They spend too much time gazing at each other, so they grow angry with each other, and their bodies and minds get tired. They pass away from that group of gods. It's possible that one of those beings passes away from that group and is reborn in this state of existence. Having done so, they go forth from the lay life to homelessness. By dint of keen, resolute, committed and diligent effort, and right focus, they experience an immersion of the heart of such a kind that they recollect that past life, but no further. They say, 'The gods who are not malevolent don't spend too much time gazing at each other, so they don't grow angry with each other. Their bodies and minds don't get tired, and they don't pass away from that group of gods. They are permanent, everlasting, eternal, imperishable, remaining the same for all eternity. But we who were malevolent spent too much time gazing at each other, so our minds grew angry with each other. Our bodies and minds got tired, and we passed away from that group of gods. We are impermanent, not lasting, short-lived, perishable, and have come to this state of existence. This is how you describe in your tradition that the origin of the world came about due to those who are malevolent.' They say, 'That is what we have heard, Reverend Gotama, just as you say.' Bhagava, I understand the origin of the world. Directly knowing this, the realized one does not come to ruin.